How do you know the life or personal coach you are about to work with is who they say they are? How do you know if they can do the job? At the Africa Board for Coaching, Consulting and Coaching Psychology, we can tell you. So, before you share your secrets and spend your money, check with us first. Visit www.abccp.com or call us on 012-751-7608. The ABCCP. The professional.
More music, more inspiration, Vuga Online.
Highway Harley Davidson. There are no words.
Are you? What are you doing? What have you been up to? I'm sure that you've been having fun and that you've got lots to tell me. Healthcare Hour is all about healthcare. It's all about healthcare professionals. It's about knowing that healthcare professionals are real. They are real people. And healthcare is something that we all need at some point, or a loved one needs. More about me. I am a master coach. I am a master mentor. I'm somebody who believes firmly in healthcare. It's a place where I started off and it feels like home to me. But as you know, I like direct conversation. I like to the point. We've got to cut through the icing on the outside and go in and see the cake. We've been doing a lot about mental health, and that is something that we've all started to talk about. And so after the break, I'm going to introduce you to my fascinating guest. And we're going to talk about everything, not only healthcare, but we're going to be talking specifically about mental health. So let's pop out for that break. Let's pay the bills. And when we come back, we're going to be renewing our conversation.
Based on true events, Paris 2014.
Oui, hello, Marcel. Hope you and the family are well. Listen, you know those 2,000 trains that we ordered for the 15 billion euro, yeah? Well, we have a big problem. They are too wide for the stations, you know, for the concrete. So they basically, they cannot run. Yeah, I know. Anyway, the president has been informed, so you have to call me back. Urgent, okay? Urgent. Au revoir. Merci. Au revoir. Call me.
Working late tonight? Make it McDelivery.
You're listening to Vuga Online Radio.
Welcome back. You are tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. We are going to be talking everything mental health today. And you know me, I like the questions under the questions. So we're not going to ask the normal questions. My guest today is Ms. Charlene Zunkel. And I can tell you more about her. She is the founder and CEO of the Global Mental Health Peer Network. She is a global mental health advocate with lived experience with schizophrenia. She has published internationally on issues related to mental health and human rights, stigma, and the needs of people with mental health conditions in low and middle income countries. Ms. Zunkel co-chaired the Lancet Commission on Ending Stigma and Discrimination in Mental Health. She's currently a commissioner on the Lancet Commission on Psychosis, and was a commissioner on the Lancet Commission on Global Mental Health and Sustainable Development, and the one on the future of psychiatry. Ms. Zunkel has been involved in providing technical assistance to national and international mental health related policies, reports, and documents. She serves on a number of international boards. I counted more than 15. Sure. And received several national and international awards for her work. So, Charlene, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me on this show and talk about this important topic that should be an everyday topic.
So, yes, let's talk about your lived experience with schizophrenia, Charlene. Could you share that with us?
Most certainly. Yeah, It's going right back when I was actually lucky. I completed high school. And shortly after that, I started experiencing symptoms. I'm talking about 1991. So you can imagine stigma was much worse than it's now. Back then, I honestly never heard the word back then about schizophrenia. People used to talk about nervous breakdowns, but that was kind of the limits of my understanding of it. But I think for me, what was worse was, you know, when people found out about my diagnosis, how they responded to me, I could immediately feel their attitudes change. So much so that all of a sudden, like all my independence and decision making was taken away from me. I was told that I'll never ever be able to work again. Back then, I lost my job as a result, actually. And I couldn't drive a car. I wasn't allowed to stay on my own. I wasn't allowed to manage finances. I was even told as much when I was involuntarily admitted that I had no rights and that I was the property of the president. That kind of shook me. I thought now all of a sudden I'm an object and not a person. But it was a really long journey. It took about 9 years before I was stabilized on a medication, which I'm actually still on. None of the other medications really worked. I spent a total of 4 years in psychiatric hospitals, 2 years in a psychosocial rehabilitation center. But what really changed the course of my journey was the severe human rights violations within the mental health system in the psychiatric hospitals. And I just thought to myself, you know, this shouldn't happen to people. People shouldn't be treated like that. So I kind of made a conscious decision that I need to do something about it because it was like everybody else was silent about it. But of course, I needed to kind of get myself on track because I was pretty useless, not helping anybody if you sleep like 20 hours a day and, you know, all of those things. So I got myself into a routine, kind of a more kind of try to heal myself within a recovery approach. So eventually someone said that I should actually turn my life story into a theater production. Okay. I was a bit scared because I never even seen a theater play at the time, but I took it on and I did produce a theater play on my life story and later a short feature film, which is on YouTube. But that kind of people got noticed me through that and I got offered a job. So I took the job and in that position, I helped develop a Gauteng, a local provincially based service user movement. Later on, I moved on to national and then I got involved in international work. And that's when I decided, but this is really an issue globally, especially in low and middle income countries where people with mental health conditions voices are silent. So I started the Global Mental Health Peer Network with the aim to kind of empower people and to develop lived experience leadership involved. That's kind of in a nutshell my story.
Okay, so thank you so much. And also that you've been brave enough because of the stigma, because of the discrimination, that you've been brave enough to step up, to hear you, to share your story, and also to change, you know, the journey for so many other people as a result.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, so let's go into mental health and how we changed. You know, we used to talk about mental illness, mental wellness. Could you explain to us, you know, you've said a few times now, lived condition with a mental, you know, lived experience with a mental health condition. Could you explain the different terminology?
Certainly. Yeah. Okay. Maybe I should say the way we kind of define lived experience with a mental health condition is anyone who's been impacted by any kind of mental health problem, whether long-term or temporary, and whether they may have used mental health, you know, services directly or an official diagnosis or not, we base it on you have that experience. struggling with that specific problem, whatever it is, anxiety, depression, you know, right up to the more severe conditions like schizophrenia. So we don't base it necessarily on a diagnosis. For us, it's about the experience itself.
So that's a very important distinction, because if we look at mental health as a continuum, it doesn't matter where you are along this continuum or whether you have received a diagnosis and a stamp of yes, you are, or you know, your condition is, that you are free to share your lived experience wherever it is that you are.
Exactly. Sometimes I think the diagnosis part is more for access, if I could put it that way. If you receive a diagnosis, you receive access to mental health care, you receive access to, you know, certain things attached to that diagnosis. But for me, it's a bit different having, you know, the experience. That shouldn't be solely just based on a diagnosis.
I'm imagining that, and I have seen that a lot of people compare their lived experience and then they go, no, but my lived experience is worse than your lived experience, so you must shush.
Yeah, that is the way I see it. Everybody experiences a mental health problem differently. I cannot say my schizophrenia is worse than someone living with depression because I don't know that person's circumstances. Because there's a lot of factors that how you experience a mental health condition. I mean, there can be cultural issues, circumstances involved, financial issues, a lot of things, which can make your experience of the condition much worse. So you shouldn't weigh it up against that. And I think we should respect each other's experiences for what they are and not measure it against each other.
It's also about us bringing kindness in. It's about holding space for people to share their lived experience, whatever their lived experience is, and to not compare. Well, no, you're a 4 and I'm a 6, you're a 3 and I'm a whatever, or no, you're an A category of a B something, as opposed to just holding space for each other and understanding and having empathy and being more human.
Absolutely. Yes. It is a bit difficult, I think, when people seem to look at, when they speak about common mental health conditions and severe conditions, I think that is the problem where people kind of start measuring things up.
I think also when they bring in the idea of normal, because that is also very discriminatory, because what is normal?
Exactly. There's no such thing as normal. I think if you really go, okay, I know there's statistics around how many people are affected by mental health conditions.
Yeah.
But in all honesty, I do believe that every single person at some point experienced mental health difficulties.
Yes. Where we slide down the continuing a bit and then we think, okay, hang on, let's move away from there in tiny steps. But for some people, it is more of an effort to move away from where they're not thriving as well as they could. But yes, every single person has got to make a conscious effort every day.
Absolutely. And it's also not about weakness. It doesn't mean that you have a mental health problem and you manage to get out of it, that the next person should get out of it because you got out of it. And it's not about the weakness. I think you shouldn't also look at that. And I think that's how people sometimes see it.
All right. So what do you recommend for people who, for instance, when they're hearing somebody use terminology, and I know certainly at the Lancet Commission, you shared a slide with us about the way we are speaking that is not empowering for people?
Yes, there are, of course, terms that's absolutely a no-go not to use, which is just kind of cruel. You can imagine, like, you are crazy. I know we use crazy loosely, like you must be crazy to do that. I don't have a problem with that. But when you refer to someone specific who's got a mental health condition and refer to them as crazy with the intention of describing them as a person, then it's hurtful. there was so many derogatory terms that came out. I mean, schizo, lunatic, you know, there's a range of them. But of course, then there's terminology that's acceptable. Or let's say, you know, like political correct or not that, but, you know, which people with lived experience themselves accept. But it's important to also note that, like for myself, I prefer the phrase mental health condition over mental illness because I don't feel ill. But someone else with a mental health condition doesn't have a problem with the term mental illness. I know people often use patient, everybody. You're a mental patient or you're patient. I'm not a patient. I do see a psychiatrist, but I'm not a patient. I'm a patient when I'm in a hospital. Then I'm a patient. So those things. But I think the most correct phrases to use is when you put the person first. So it's a person with a mental health condition, person living with a mental health condition. There's also another term often used, but more in the human rights domain, which is a person with a psychosocial disability. But yeah, it's always best approach is to always ask a person how they would like to be addressed, just to get it right.
And I think it's also important that when somebody uses the incorrect term from your perspective, to be kind in correcting.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think we should, yeah, respect and just understand that some terms can be hurtful and it can kind of trigger people, people's experience, bad experiences.
Yes. Okay, so let's go for that break. And when we come back, we're going to hear all about the Lancet Commission and what it's about and what the recommendations are. But first, we're going to go for that break.
The roads have emptied. Only us left. Kids sleeping in back. Cat's eyes shine bright. White lines roll by. The rhythm of the streetlights. Radio hums quietly. Rain starts. Hypnotic wipers. Pull in. Hot latte and apple pie. Ease back into the darkness.
Over 600 McDonald's open 24 hours. We are awake.
Vuga, it's time to wake up.
Welcome back. You are tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. Today, my guest is Charlene Zunkel. And Charlene has been sharing with us an in-depth look about her lived experience and with her mental health condition, which is schizophrenia. She's also plays a huge big role because of her journey in that she's made a huge difference to people with lived condition of mental health in different kinds of conditions. And she's just been teaching us the terminology that can be hurtful and how we need to be more aware, but also we need to be kind to each other of putting people back on the track of saying, no, maybe use this term and not that term. But Charlene, you recently have been part of the Lancet Commission on Global Mental Health, and you've been looking at how to in stigma and discrimination. And that commission has got 8 different findings. Could you share those with us?
Yes, I'm going to kind of summarize the findings. Yeah, so it really looked
we know it's a huge big paper. So yeah, we'd appreciate summarizing them, just making sense of them for us.
Yeah, I think, first of all, we spoke earlier about terminology. Definitely I identify terminology as an important factor because it really shapes people's attitudes, look at their values, and it sparks emotions and how they perceive people. And the recommendations that specifically came from a lived experience survey that was conducted as part of this commission was to use kind and non-derogatory terms. I also spoke about mentioned some of those derogatory terms. Another key message that also came out of the Lancet Commission was around human rights, because stigma is a human rights issue. It basically infringes on people's human rights. We know that it has severe toxic effects on people's mental health conditions. It also makes their experiences worse and creates social exclusion. It reduces access to mental and physical health care. We do know that's quite a big issue. Another issue around access is also that once people are stigmatized, the stigma actually prevents people from actually seeking help, which is quite a big issue in terms of this. Also in terms of employment and education opportunities. People don't easily find employment once they have a mental health condition. But maybe to mention that we also did a large systematic review of anti-stigma interventions. And the finding in that was that social contact, it's also called what contact-based education. For example, when a person with a mental health condition share their lived experience, that has shown to be one of the most effective ways of breaking down stigma and discrimination. Other of findings were also roles of the media around that issue, that the media can play either a negative or positive way in terms of stigma and discrimination, especially in terms of issues around people predicting people as being unpredictable and dangerous. I know that happens quite frequently in terms of schizophrenia, conditions like psychosis. But there was also a set of recommendations, if I can go into that, that the commission developed. So those were targeted at different stakeholders. There was a recommendation for UN agencies and that to be led by the World Health Organization. And that was to reform mental health policies and laws that kind of promote stigma and discrimination. But there's also, of course, laws that we know in some of several actually African countries where, for example, suicide is criminalized. There was also a recommendation with World Health Organization, together with their international partner organizations, to encourage countries to also adapt media toolkits for implementation in all countries to reduce stigma and discrimination. Legislation was another one. In terms of suicide criminalization. There's also a recommendation specifically at employers to also, WHO, the World Health Organization, recently published a report specifically on mental health in the workplace. So that is also to encourage employers and other organizations to implement guidelines that was issued by WHO. Recommendations were also made to health and social care sectors, and that is to establish a pre-qualifying courses for health and social care staff that should include sessions around stigma reduction. I think an important component of that is also to include people with lived experience within training. Recommendations for the media was also made in terms of how they should promote mental health and contribute to the reduction of stigma and discrimination in mental health. I think there was two recommendations for people with lived experience, but also for local communities and civil society. Those two recommendations were very much focused on the importance of including people with lived experience in stigma reduction initiatives, and that should be supported. People with lived experience should be supported to play a role in that.
Yes, so lots of recommendations. I think it's also interesting in that it's almost like in one side, we're asking people with lived experience of mental health conditions to come forward, to step up, to say, yay, here I am. Okay. But on the other side, we have, how safe is it for them to do that?
Yeah, that is always a tricky one. I know in some countries, there's actually training programs for people with lived experience on how to deliver their recovery story. So that they can feel safe in that space and that they don't share things that make them more vulnerable. I think that training should be also been implemented in countries, other countries as well, to help people. That should be part of that support provided to people with lived experience. But of course, safe. So it's a twofold thing, because there's stigma and discrimination. Now you're asking people with lived experience to share their stories and expose them to stigma and discrimination. It is a tricky one, but I think we mustn't force anyone to share their story. I think that's just wrong. Only when people are willing to share their stories. I see in my organization, there's many who would like to share their stories, and there are still some who feel they're not ready. So one should never be forced to share your story. I think in terms of the Global Mental Health Peer Network, that recommendation around lived experience was specifically aimed at us, the Global Mental Health Peer Network, to also look at that. So we provide that empowerment for people with lived experience so that they can get to that level, you know, where they feel safe and more comfortable in sharing their story. And I think for someone also who share their story, you should also provide the support. When we do sometimes have events where people share their stories, we always make sure there is peer support available for that person should they be triggered by anything related to their presentation.
So that's so important that we educate people of, did you know that you need or you could have? And you go like, no, I didn't know that. And so this is where we need to take away the tiptoe, because often we tiptoe around the subject. We go, yay, here's the report. But for me, it's about taking it, okay, we've got the report. So now, so what? What do we do with it? And I'm sure that a lot of employers, a lot of governments are listening now going, yeah, and what do we do? What's the next step?
Yes, that's a tricky one. I think, you know, not one specific stakeholder or one person can really make this a success. This is a collaborative effort. And unless people come together actively and say, let's take this and, you know, put it into action, we're not going to make a difference. Absolutely not. Yeah, and I know that's sometimes difficult because your role players are, let's say, like international agencies plus governments plus civil society. Yeah, it also for me is a respect for the different stakeholders involved. If you don't have that respect and you function in silos or isolation, we're not going to get anywhere.
Okay, so let's go out for a break. When we come back, I would also like to hear more about, from an insurance point of view, from a medical aid point of view, and what is your person, what do we do as the public? Because I think we need to look to see how can we practically take it from the document, okay, that's got all the pages, don't know where to start, to the hearts and minds and hands of people so that collectively we can make a difference. We're going for that break.
No one decides to go into debt. It creeps up on you.
Hey.
Slowly.
Ah!
Debt follows debt. Follows debt. Unless you do something about it. Face your debt problems before they cripple you. It's time to do something.
Vuga, it's time to wake up with Vuga Online.
Welcome back. You are tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. I am speaking to Charlene Zunkel today. Charlene sits on so many committees, you won't believe. I must actually ask you about those committees. But all around mental health And recently, she co-chaired the Lancet Commission on Ending Stigma and Discrimination in Mental Health. And we're talking as well about correct terminology with, we're speaking now about lived experience of mental health conditions and how it's not about the fact that you've been diagnosed with a specific mental health condition. It's about the fact that you've got experience and encouraging people to share their experience. What we've also touched on is because of the stigma and discrimination, we're also asking people to step up, to share. But what Charlene has shared with us is that people have got to be comfortable. We also need to not force people, but we need to support them. We can't then expose them and someone says, oh, did you hear that? Okay. So let's talk about insurance and medical aid when it comes to mental health conditions, Charlene.
Yes, I think that is a sector that's very discriminatory. There are so many stories around medical aids, for example, it doesn't cover. Let's start with that. I had that experience. Even though it's a chronic condition, they didn't cover all of my medication or my psychiatrist visits. There's other issues around insurance that people are not allowed or not given the opportunity to take out insurance or to be covered by insurance merely because they have a mental health condition. Or even when they do have insurance and it's, you know, a mental health related issue that they claim for, it's not covered. And that is just completely wrong. I'm speaking from my perspective. It's actually a human rights violation.
Okay, and so what do we do as the public? For exactly as you said, a human rights violation. What do we do about this?
I think as the public, sometimes we tend to not report these issues. We just keep it to ourselves and we accept that this, this is just how it is. But I think we really should collectively, we report these issues and maybe come together and, you know, do something about it, to really make an uproar about it, because it's just wrong. I know in terms of what's also quite interesting, what I've seen in terms of the disability sector. So let's say you need to claim some kind of disability insurance, for example. Sometimes they don't see mental health conditions as a form of a disability, yet it is a psychosocial disability. So discrimination even happens on that kind of sector.
And what it actually teaches people is to hide, but then it's reinforcing the stigma.
Absolutely. And I think, exactly. So, and also the discrimination. But I think we should really collectively address this. I know there's like ombudsmen, for example. And that is an avenue we should make use of. There's the Human Rights Commission. That's also another avenue that hasn't been exhausted. If you exhaust all your local avenues in terms of redress, there's always the United Nations who come up with all, whereas all these conventions like the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which you can actually use to your advantage.
So I think it's about that when you get the no to your life cover, when you get the no to your other insurance, when you get the no to your medical aid cover, because you've been honest on your form, it's also about not just leaving it there. It's not about allowing the discrimination. It's about stepping up and saying, no, not accepting that one.
Absolutely. And I think also before you take out an insurance or medical aid, just make absolutely sure and ask. I always say to people, you always have to have a paper trail. Don't just ask verbally. Have it in an email. Have it in writing to say, yes, we cover that and that and that. So because one day when you do need it, then you have it on paper. And if they don't cover you, then you go to the next one. I think we just need to isolate those who really discriminate.
Okay. All right, so that is powerful. I like the way that we're getting down to under the icing. What's happening with the cake? You know, what do we need to do? So let's go back to your play and, you know, how we have that expression. Do you have more plays? Is there more writing? I know that there was poetry as part of the commission.
Oh, yes. I actually like the literary and performing arts as a way of destigmatizing mental health condition. Because I feel it's a way of people expressing themselves, first of all, and visualizing, for example, my theater plays. I did one on my life, and then I did one on bipolar disorder and one on depression. And it was quite amazing to see how people can kind of associate with the experience. Because previously when I've been on a television show and a radio show where people called in and they said, doesn't look like you have schizophrenia, or it doesn't sound like you have. So it creates that, I'm not sure how I must look or how I should sound like, but I think that visual part of telling a story is so important. And I think poetry was extremely powerful in this commission. And it was amazing how these poets with lived experience articulated their experiences. I think that made it so much more powerful, relating to all the, you know, all the science and evidence, but actually filtering it down to what people deeply inside feel and experience.
Yeah, to go into your point as well, where people saying, oh, but you don't sound like, or you don't look like. I think people have, you know, you get a word, schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, and people attach a picture. They attach a lifestyle. They attach a, oh, but, and then of course, you know, you add movies, you add media to that, you add your kind of thing. And so then it's like, but you aren't behaving the way the picture is in my head, you know? And I think that's where people are coming up with, oh, but it also teaches people different ways of, no, you are functioning. You sit on 15 committees. How is that possible? Or more than 15 committees.
I actually scaled down, to be honest, because I couldn't manage all of them.
So sure, no. I could imagine what your diary looks like, Charlene. Yes.
Yeah, no, it's fully packed. But it's interesting because, you know, I think my role on these committees are merely to provide the lived experience perspective. And that is a good thing to see how kind of this field has changed, where people with lived experience voices are actually starting to matter. Previously, we were silent voices, really. We spoke and spoke and nothing happens. And it's now like, was like moving towards a compulsory factor in anything that you should include lived experience. And I see that as an enormous achievement.
Okay, so let's talk about the lived experience voices that may be silenced now. They're listening to you right now. They might be thinking, oh, I can talk. I can come up. What is your advice for people? And I also saw a social media post, for instance, where a lady shared her lived experience with postnatal depression, where she's saying, no, I need to speak out about it. But what is your advice for people to share, but to share safely?
Yes. First of all, never share anything that you feel uncomfortable with. And I think you also need to consider the context in which you are. Let's say, for example, you're in a country where suicide is criminalized. And yeah, you go and you share that you just attempted suicide. I'm just using a random example here. You will be locked up. So that's not safe for you. Or in a country or a context where, you know, people really harm other people. I even, in South Africa, when I did training across, I think it was in Northern Cape somewhere, someone actually told me that his neighbors found out about his schizophrenia. Every time he leaves the yard, going to the street, they throw him with stones. So, for example, in a community like that, if you know you're going to share your story, you're going to end up getting hurt, then rather not do it. Just always think of your own safety. And only when you're comfortable and secure, and only when you know you have the support, if you know, anything goes wrong or you feel triggered or it's harmful, that you have that backing.
Very important what you've said, because sometimes you could be in a, like the person could be sitting with us right here now, okay, and they feel safe to share their story, but it's also going out on international radio. So, you know, your story may be going out on international radio into a country that doesn't accept the story. And so, yes, your safety is first. But also to understand that your story is not just being shared in the lounge with somebody. It goes out on social media. And social media here goes like a wave.
Yes. And I think the other thing that you also need to understand is once your story is out there, there's no reversing. You know, there's no taking it back. You need to think of the impact of sharing your story going forward. So it's really something you need to think through very carefully.
And so I think it's very important and it's very responsible of us to encourage people to share their story, but to make sure that they're safe and that they aren't going to have the stigma, they aren't going to have the discrimination, and they aren't going to have the long-term effect of the feeling that you must, that you have to.
Yes. Absolutely. You know, same is in the world. I've been very many years in the world of advocacy, for example. Being part of policy reviews. So now when they say, you know, people with lived experience must be involved in policy, the fact of the matter is you cannot randomly select people with lived experience and expect them to review a policy. Not everybody is interested in policy or reviewing policies. The same should go for anti-stigma efforts or stuff like this. Not everybody's interested in doing this.
I think also, and before we go for our last break, we also got to be careful about, okay, on our committee, we need somebody with lived experience. Hey, we need somebody with lived experience of, you know, can you imagine that one? And, you know, but it's also about, hey, we need the token woman. We need the taken this. We need LGBT. Now, where can we find one? And so that's also where the recommendation is, get somebody with lived experience. But then, okay, here's the committee. There's a space. We need somebody. So it can't just be tokenism and tick the block.
No, absolutely not. It needs to be meaningful and authentic. So if you randomly select people, it's impossible that you can get any meaningful contributions, or it won't be authentic. Then, yes, it's tokenism.
Right. So on that, let's go for our last break. And then Charlene, if you can sum up for us, where to, what do we need to do? But we'll have a break first.
How do you know the life or personal coach you are about to work with is who they say they are? How do you know if they can do the job? At the Africa Board for Coaching, Consulting and Coaching Psychology, we can tell you. So before you share your secrets and spend your money, check with us first. Visit www.abccp.com or call us on 012-751-7608. The ABCCP, the professional body for coaches.
Stay woke with VUGA Online Radio.
Welcome back. You are tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. My guest, Charlene Zunkel, has been sharing with us from her heart about being a person with experience on a mental health condition, specifically schizophrenia. She also speaks very much from an advocacy point of view and has shared that it's important that you feel safe, that you don't feel like you have to, or that if you do share your story, to make sure that you are going to be safe in the environment that you're sharing it in. And remember that social media crosses environments and it crosses it at lightning speed. So Charlene, in closing, what's your message for us?
Well, I would say definitely that going forward, all stakeholders, whether it's from government up to down, family members as well, people with lived experience, communities, media, everybody need to collaborate and kind of form a united front to take this forward and really make sure that people, all people experiencing mental health problems to whatever degree, that they have a safe space. They can live in a society that's stigma discrimination free. If you really think about it, it will only benefit the country in terms of having employment for people with mental health conditions and having education opportunities. Ultimately, it does benefit everybody.
Thank you so much for joining us, Charlene.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes. Okay, so remember that you are loved. Remember that you matter. Today, we've been speaking to Charlene Zunkel about healthcare and the findings in the Lancet Commission. But it's about taking those findings and making sure that they reach the hands, hearts, and minds of every single one of us. Thank you. You've been tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen.
Vuga Online Radio, your inspiration radio station.